Hello, I'm Douglas Herbert in Paris, and today I'm speaking to Gaël Vessière. He's been France's ambassador to Ukraine since August of 2023, and he previously served as France's top diplomat in Croatia. And today, he's up against it. Nearly 4 years after Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, the war grinds on, and peace remains elusive. And what we're really asking is, will 2026, this new year, be the year that Europe finds an off-ramp, if you will, to its gravest crisis since World War II? I'd like to welcome you to our studios. You're in Paris for a number of reasons this week. There's an ambassadors meeting. All the ambassadors annually get together here. But before I get to your specific remit, Ukraine, I want to ask you, everyone's been following Venezuela this week. We've all been the aftermath of the capture by U.S. forces in a covert operation of Venezuela's president, Nicolas Maduro, whisking him off to the U.S. to face trial. Now, French President Emmanuel Macron said that he took note of it, and he said the Venezuelan people should rejoice in the end of a dictatorship. I'm curious, though, what you'd say to critics who argue that this is a gift to Vladimir Putin, in the sense that it is proof, maybe, that leaders can sometimes do what they want and what suits them, even if it flouts international norms and rules.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. Seen through the Ukrainian crisis of Ukrainian war way, I would say that, you know, first and foremost, the departure of Nicolas Maduro, which is obviously a good news for Venezuela and for everybody, is bad news for Vladimir Putin, because Venezuela has got very few friends internationally, but Russia was one of the main friends of Venezuela. So actually, the fact that it actually happened is not good for Russia. And actually, you can see through the statements they make that they are embarrassed, because at the same time they have to criticize this because they have to protect their former ally, and at the same time they are ill at ease because they don't want to be too harsh against President Trump while there are all these discussions about Ukraine. So they are a bit off balance, and definitely this is good.
On that level, but then can't you also see the other side of this coin, where he says, well, look, the U.S. seems to be able to do whatever it wants in its sphere of influence, so who are they to tell me what to do in, quote, my sphere of influence, i.e. Ukraine?
I don't think that President Trump, but I cannot speak for him, of course, but I don't think that President Trump would say that what he thinks that he can do or should do inside of the Americas is something that others could do elsewhere. I think that he sees the U.S. as quite a number one player in the world, and that nobody is exactly on the same footing as the United States of America. So I think that's the first answer to this. But then this said, of course, the fact that there would be a use of force without any kind of international framework or any kind of legal framework is in itself not such good news for those who believe that the rule of law should play an important role, including in the international relations, and that the UN Security Council and other organs have got an important role to play. So this has to be taken into consideration too.
Let's bring it back to your neck of the woods, as they say, Ukraine. The coalition of the willing, France and its European allies, they've been meeting a lot in the past days and weeks. They are trying to finalize a peace settlement that would give Ukraine, I'm going to use that word, the term you hear, security guarantees. Mm-hmm. And the question just about everyone still wants to know, including, I imagine, Europe, let alone Ukraine, is what are the security guarantees exactly? How will they work? Who will provide them? How long will they last?
Thank you. Well, first, of course, security guarantees are key, because if you are seeing this through as an Ukrainian, you would say, okay, Russia attacked them in 2014, they attacked them again in 2022. Is there is peace tomorrow? What guarantees can they have that is not going to start again? And it's key, because if you cannot plan for the future, then people will just leave Ukraine and the reform track towards the EU would stop and it would be a catastrophe.
Because we've been here before, right?
Exactly.
Where you thought there was perhaps an agreement in place and Russia violated it. I'm saying it bluntly.
Absolutely. So they say that they need security guarantees, and we do think that they are right in saying so. So there is a large group of countries, more than 30 countries actually, who work together on different kind of security guarantees. The first security guarantee is to provide equipment and regeneration, as the military would say, capability for the Ukrainian army, because the first security guarantee of Ukraine would be its own army, obviously. But we have to help them, train, equip them, etc. But then you need some kind of statement that we would feel committed, or we would feel not be out of this if Russia would attack them again. And third, actually, if you really want to exert some deterrence, you need to have some troops on the ground for the training, but also because they would be on the ground in the framework of a ceasefire. Now, not to participate in any kind of fighting, but knowing that they are here would actually prevent Russia from attacking again. So that's the thinking.
But could I just jump in there, Mr. Besser? I don't have to tell you. You know better than anyone. Saying the very words, troops on the ground, no matter what capacity they are there for, that to Putin is game over. He will not accept a deal that involves troops on the ground, French, whether they're French or British or German. What do you say to that?
Well, actually, to some extent, the question is not very relevant, I'm afraid, because if there are troops on the ground, but which ground? Ukrainian ground. So who is in charge of allowing troops to be on his ground under a ceasefire? Ukraine. Of course, those troops would not be on the Russian side, neither in Russia nor in the part of Ukraine which is temporarily occupied by Russia. It would be on the Ukrainian side. So Russia would not have a say. In practice, of course, they can use this as leverage in the discussion, because they could say, OK, we refuse to have a ceasefire because we don't want these security guarantees. So at one point, this will have to be addressed with Russia, but inside the question of a ceasefire. We are not there yet. For the time being, what we are trying to do is to build a strong basis between Ukraine, the US, and the EU
in general,
including those countries who are willing to participate into a coalition of the willing, even if they are not Europeans. For example, Canada, Australia, New Zealand,
right,
who are very active players, or Japan. Yeah.
I don't want to split hairs, but this really seems to be the crux of the issue. How do you get to a ceasefire, let alone a peace settlement, if you're a European, if you're the U.S., if you know ahead of time that Vladimir Putin, not my speculation, Vladimir Putin saying he will fight until victory unless his demands are met. That's his categorical statement.
I hear it, and he said that. But then there is no possibility of ceasefire. That's it. Because the Ukrainians are not going to let their territories go. So if the objectives of Vladimir Putin is to get four oblasts plus Crimea and to say that everybody else would recognize it's Russian, now Ukrainians say, OK, we are not interested in that. We just continue fighting.
They will not capitulate, as Zelensky has said. I want to ask you this. You're on the ground in Ukraine. You have a better sense, perhaps, of the dynamics of what's going on there than any of us do here. According to Deep State, and we're going to show our viewers some figures there, Russia seized just over 4,300 square kilometers of Ukrainian territory in 2025, last year. Now, sounds like a lot, but it's actually less than 1% of Ukraine's territory. So in an entire 12-month period, less than 1% of territory seized. Does that figure seem to be accurate to you? And does the time play in Ukraine's favor?
This figure is accurate. And actually what it tells us is that Russian people and authorities are very good into bringing disinformation and pushing their narrative, because their narrative is that Russia is winning militarily, Ukraine is losing. You are looking at the map. This is not what you see. What you see on the map is that Russia is pushing, that they are gaining a few kilometers every day, and that at the end of the day, it's 1% of the Ukrainian territory. For our viewers, I would recall that Ukraine is a bigger geographically country than France. So it's a huge country. So 1% of this, okay, that's some territory, but it's still 1%. So actually, there are some projections that to be able to conquer the rest of the Donbas that Russia is not controlling now, they would need at least 1.5 years, maybe two,
at the present rhythm.
And of course, it's not linear, because they have very strong citadels like Kramatorsk, heavily fortified. So maybe it would be longer. They still don't control completely Pokrovsk since February 2024, actually.
Despite saying they do.
They do. The truth is that they certainly control 99% or 95% of the city, but there are still some Ukrainians fighting here, and they are extremely brave, actually. Yeah.
As you know, Volodymyr Zelensky recently shook up his top entourage, his cabinet. He has a new top advisor to replace his previous one. He's a former military intelligence chief. Western world, we don't know that much about him. What are your impressions of him? Do you know him?
Of course, I know him. He's a legend in Ukraine because of his military heroism act, actually. He's a hero for Ukrainians. He's a very discreet man, but he's got a very sharp sense of analysis. So actually, the way we read that is that that's the will of President Zelensky, well, to turn the page after Mr. Yermak had to step down under pressure into some scandals, and to have a new figure coming in with maybe a different roadmap, because Mr. Budanov is very much focused on security, intelligence, military questions, and maybe less on politics in the global sense. So it's actually a signal that the Ukrainians are continuing to fight and that they are getting ready to continue to fight for as long as it takes.
And perhaps someone who will be able to advise them on how to advance their drone technology even further and ramp up their military.
Well, on this, President Zelensky just appointed Mr. Fedorov, who is a specialist of digital issues. He launched this great digital platform, DIA, and he was the creator of the army of drones in Ukraine as Minister of Defense. So it's exactly as you say, yes.
Gael Vessière, we could go on and on. I wish we could, but we have run out of time. I'd like to thank you for being here at such a critical moment, a critical juncture. You're in a critical job. Don't have to remind our viewers. The Coalition of the Willing is trying to cobble together a peace plan that will perhaps maybe be acceptable to the Kremlin. Let's stay tuned, keep watching, and stay tuned to France 24. More news coming up.